Hi, and welcome to the Ryle Books podcast. Today we're sharing the recording of the launch of Crossings, Creative Ecologies of Cruising, a collaborative text by queer scholar João Florencio and artist Liz Rosenfeld, which took place at our space in Brussels on the 19th of June 2025. Liz Rosenfeld is a Berlin-based interdisciplinary artist and educator, working across performance, moving image, experimental writing, and drawing. Their work explores questions of queer temporality, memory, and emotional and political ecologies, often through the lens of cruising and corporeal excess, working with what they call, quote, flesh as a non-binary collaborative material, end quote. Liz's practice, often auto-theoretical, questions how queer ontologies are grounded in variant and hypocritical desires. João Florencio is a queer scholar currently working at the University of Linköping. His research draws from queer studies, media studies, visual culture, and cultural studies to investigate the ways in which the queer body has been produced, policed, and contested as a political site of creative and effective sexual world-making in modern and contemporary sex cultures. They published Bareback Porn, Porous Masculinities and Queer Futures, The Ethics of Becoming Pig, in 2020 by Routledge. The book that we're launching today is called Crossings, Creative Ecologies of Cruising. And it's not your conventional book. It hovers in the charged space between academic inquiry and literary experimentation, between critical manifesto and queer sex memoir. Crossings is an erotic hybrid form that dares to think through desire with desire. Throughout its chapters, the book moves swiftly between different streams of discourse, from theoretical conversations to reflections on aesthetic and artistic practice, to sensuous descriptions of bodily encounters. The writing darts in and out of these thought spaces with such a dynamic that it thoroughly and pleasurably disoriented me as a reader, and it had me pause to ask, hold on, is this sex or is this theory? In this book, an artist and an academic intertwine their voices in a dialogic exploration of cruising, not only as a sexual practice, but as a method of knowing, remembering, and of constructing queer sociality. The book unfolds both the poetic and the political forms that cruising enacts. Together, João and Liz take queer sex practices seriously as sites of knowledge production, opening up the possibility for other kinds of thinking that occur through the body and in public, in order to enact tenuous and vital spaces of queer community. For the launch, we were joined at our space in Brussels by Liz Rosenfeld, who read excerpts from their new book, and who then joined me in conversation. We hope you enjoy the recording as much as we really enjoyed the event. Thank you all for being here, and thank you, Liz. I hand over the mic.
Thank you, Chloe, and Sven, and Ryle, and all of you for coming. I'm really excited to be here, and João is unfortunately not able to come. He was really sad to miss this one. So just to contextualize, these films are films that we talk about in the book, which are some, we talk about some of the works I've made about cruising and some of the work that João has written about cruising. So sometimes we do this reading where we show some of the short films in between, but we thought maybe we'd try it this way so that you're playing behind. So I'm just going to read for a bit some excerpts from the book, and we'll have a talk afterwards. I wasn't sure how it would go. You can never know until you know. I always imagined you to be the quiet type, uncharacteristically patient, the kind of hungry bottom who doesn't ask for anything, but when formally invited, commits to the meal until the entire buffet is empty. You are the good boy who always cleans his plate, never leaving a crumb of evidence. You love to lick it clean. No need to even wash it. At least that's how I would do it if I were you. I would subtly have it all until it all runs out, until they all get tired, too hot to stay hard, until the house lights go up, eyes aching, and you realize you're the only one still there, the only soft, diffused curves left against the vernacular architecture of hard angles and empty holes, squatting among invisible debris of liquids and solids, remnants of hungry holes, vestiges. Maybe some wreckage, an uneven foundation, shaky relics of time, obvious traces and varieties of residue. Or a warm body against the cold ground with wet, muddy knees as the first morning rays of sun beam down through the green canopy. It's all very specific, ruins of sorts, always ruins. You're not the last one standing or kneeling out of desperation or loneliness or pain. It is not because you feel unfulfilled and frustrated. It is just simply a matter of fact that I am starving for it. I am starving to know all of it, and I won't stop until the end is decided for me. I'm not so interested in my own orgasm, not so interested in serving my own dick here. I am simply becoming a receptacle, a hollowed out fleshy vessel to be used, to be filled, to be used and to be filled in any environment, in any kind of space. A cinema, a hole, a theater, a maze, a stage, a booth, a podium, a gallery, a basement, a speaker's corner. Just use me. I am adaptable. The boys all know that, which is why they often save me for last. Make me wait until they are ready to dump the last load of the night. Ruin me. Please ruin me. I imagine my knees might start to hurt a bit, but I don't care. It's part of it. The muscles that open my jaw, the lateral this is the hard part of this. The lateral pedagoid, the digastric, genohoid, myeloid, omnihoid, sternhoid, sternothoid, stelohoid, thyroid, I can feel they are all tired. Yet they refuse to give up, like when I'm on all fours on stage with my tongue hanging out, spit pooling down my tits, hitting the dance floor, infinite flesh holes opening the audience. They refuse to get tired. Sometimes I stop and take a sip of water or elegantly look to the side to stretch them, to give them a rest. But I do it in such a way that no one will notice because I refuse to be that kind of bottom. My mouth is not just strained. It is getting worn out. Maybe I will be left and found as a fossil lying in the dark room or buried under rotting leaves or found under the recycling behind the supermarket. Whatever happens, I am committed. I will perform through the pain, through the fatigue, the way I imagine a ballet dancer does while maintaining what seems to be a visible effortlessness. Many times I've been told you make it look effortless, and then I become the most fulfilled, unfillable whole, again and again and again and again. It turns me on to think about you, I, me, us, left behind as fossils in cruising zones, because cruising zones themselves are fossilized time machines. Instead of dust, dirt, or ash, our soft tissue is buried in cum, piss, blood, sweat, poppers. That's how we sediment, how we get hard. We are remains blanketed by urgent sediment, shielded from scavengers, erosion, and decay, decomposing down to our core, left to support the others who will come, structures imprinted on interior surfaces, indentation of a fist left in holes, space left inside space, architecture. There is this book that has become a kind of old sacred book, a prophecy yet to be fulfilled, a compass for what could have been, for what I hope will one day have been. It tells a tale of the faggots as they were created and joined, the women and the queens and the fairies and all their other friends fighting, resisting, and living in the empire of men. Faggots aren't men, even though they can pass in a world of men. The faggots and their friends live the best while empires are falling, the book tells us. When an empire is falling, the men become so busy opposing the rebellious elsewhere and searching for the reasons why this is happening that they have no time to watch the faggots and their friends at home, it tells us. I think that is why so many of us have found ourselves together in the same space. To be precise, we live better in the ruins of empires. The ruins give us solace and the ruins protect us. And from the cracks in the ruins that witness but speak not, from there where cum and stone, leather and wood, spit and steel touch one another, new beautiful forms of life spout in all their fragile glory, in all their poetic determination. Dark roses of the present, scents of precious flesh, of tobacco, of sweat, piss and soil. We fuck one another, and in doing so, we honor each other. The memory appears at night when the bones are quietest. It was dark that night, but not as pitch black as I would have hoped for. My eyes adjusted too fast, and it was though I could see in the dark. I was hoping not to be able to watch, but rather just rely on feeling the abyss, falling into the dark hole. It's exciting when you can feel the corners but not see them, fingers searching, sometimes rimming a hole in the wall that could be a hole in a body. Light coming through the ripped seams will just continue to expand, because what is the point of repair in a space that is in constant use? Architecture, hard and soft, flesh and non-flesh, objects of desire, you and me, and also them. Two rules govern these places of nourishment. First, all must remain quiet so the soft sexual noises can be heard. Second, anyone who is done must do. If you get, you've got to give. You and I have never gone cruising together before. While we sat in the dark room of the most infamous of Berlin's cruising bars, I was thinking about how I hadn't been in an explicitly marked cruising space since early 2020. Explicitly marked meaning the dark room of a cruise bar, a known area in a public park or bathroom or even a sex party with a playroom, maybe a dungeon. That also means I hadn't been in a cruising space since I started taking testosterone full-time nearly 3 years ago. I just watched. I can't believe I just watched. Voyeurism, too, is participation. I watched and I turned men away, which was a new experience for me. I liked it. The handful of times I had successfully passed in cruising spaces were far and few between. My most successful experiences had been in bear bars as a fat body going to cruising spaces with unquestionably readable male people, or on a few special gem-like occasions where I was just a hole. Mostly, my cruising career had existed off trying to stay quiet and stealth until I had been found out and promptly kicked out. The most extreme experience of that occurred in my early 20s when a patron started banging on the door of the glory hole video cabin I was occupying in the back of a gay porno shop in Chicago. It's a girl. It's a girl. Like ruins, I would imagine most cruising spots are not maintained with any intention. Who cares for that which has no hope? Perhaps only the hopeless. Perhaps they clear up some glasses before the doors are locked for the day. Perhaps, in a best-case scenario, they pick up the dirty tissues, the empty bottles of poppers, the empty drug baggies at the end of the night. Still, they know it'll all come back again, that you can't rebuild what only exists through being lost. We're not talking Notre Dame Cathedral here. We're talking the temple of the butthole. I think about ruins every time I am in a cruising space. The worn-out adhesive of duct tape falling off the edge of the glory holes. Temporary wooden structures and walls fraying at the edges. Moss, mildew, compacted soil. Warm air, ripe with sweat. Lost socks, overgrown trees. The smell of spilled beer on concrete floors. The lingering rush of poppers you can just about feel. clear-cut shrubbery, gratified walls, dying leaves as the seasons change. Ruins are always in progress, never at the beginning or an end. In Medea's res, that is even the case for the ruins that have been replaced, gentrified, erased. Though structures stand on knowledgeable ground, concrete, water, sand, brick, cobblestones, land that still lives, what has happened there? What are the ethics of saving that which only exists through the decay and therefore of stopping it from being what it is? What are the ethics of saving a ruin, preventing it from ruining? In that sense, are monuments to queerness and queer sex impossible? Apart from perhaps through the continued reenactment of those histories in our own ephemeral bodies, decaying archives of decaying histories, ruins evoking other ruins that will in turn be evoked by ruins to come in a never-ending return of vulnerable flesh that does not write but still records. At a certain point, I headed upstairs from the dark room because I had to pee, only to find that the men's toilet didn't require a key, while the women's did, which meant that if one needed the toilet, one couldn't use a urinal. And in my case, that men's toilet was packed. One was forced to out themselves by requesting the key to the women's bathroom at the bar. An unfortunate flaw in this architecture, I thought, but at least they have a women's bathroom. But why aren't they just gender neutral? Would that have solved anything? I don't know. Post-pee, I tucked into an empty booth, texted you that I'd gone to get a drink, and told you to take your time, you hungry bottom. I like that we were on the same page. Begrudgingly, as I get older, I admit that I am a deep romantic. I consider one of my first romantic relationships to have been with cruising. I fell deep in love with it, and I continue to be. As I typed what became these thoughts into my phone under the cringy note title, Field Research, I went back to thinking about how you and I met our in-love lovers, the people we both call our boyfriends, our girlfriends, our partners. Ironically, we both cruised them while at work in museums. I remember you told me that you smelled him in the museum archive first. I quite literally handcuffed her to a museum in a performance art piece by an artist I was assisting, and I held the key while I circled around the museum for 3 hours, checking in periodically to make sure she was okay. I think about these stories of how cruising spaces have been architectures for so many kinds of encounters, not just the fleeting or temporary, but also the ruptures that have led us to put down roots in our own ways, to expand desire, to expand our bodies, expand the self. I was cruising when I met him, or was I at work? Does that even matter? Would it be bad to get horny while working? When you work in our fields, horniness is often a side effect of work itself. Perhaps even a driving force. I mean, we met in a work context, but indeed smelling him as he arrived reconfigured the space in my mind. It was tough to stay focused, I'm telling you. I managed to keep my cool, I think, to be professional and the like, to be a good boy. I love being a good boy. Flesh expands the capacity while masonry holds the frame. Carnality requires taut, engaged energy against the direction of thickets and coppices. I know where the fuck tree is because the other trees show me the way. I can find you in the theater because I can feel you in the space. The sharp angles and round edges map out the parameters, the heavy air, the thick breathing. They stretch and amplify. They stagnate and hold still. The shifting eclipses of searchers in the dark room lead me to you. My lover and I keep talking about meeting in the dark room. But without saying it to each other, we both know that this will never work. We both know that arranging sex will just kill the vibe. We have fucked in public quite a few times. Sneaky gropes on the street in the middle of the day. Nipples pinched while clits get hard. Wet pants. Sticky pubes. pretending to be asleep while her hole drips down my hand under towels at the straight sauna. We fucked in a hot tub while a heterosexual couple watched, ignoring that there was anyone there. I'm not sure why, but we seem to enjoy public sex in explicitly non-sex assigned spaces, the other proposition being too obvious, too defined. All the spaces I fucked in, I started listening to them and they all became the same. Space is space, and fucking makes space. All the spaces I can imagine fucking in, pretty much the same thing happens. They melt into structures, into just a bunch of locations, into expanses, into nothing specific. That is how I want to fuck. That is how I want to get ruined and be ruined. Sometimes all you need to fuck is the night. Should I keep going? Okay.
Okay.
I can't stop thinking about fissures, tears, cracks, a separation of parts, an organic division, scallops in an opening, grooves, creases, crimps, cuttings, a puckering, depressions, impressions, a corrugation in flesh and time, deep splits and valleys. In the more linear folds of my thoughts, fissures in time rupture at one point and stretch to another. They are tiny and impactful, like small waves moving grains of sand, leaving unnoticeable traces that stretch and erode like canyons. However, I have a hard time thinking about us, you and me, Liz and Joao, as binary points. When I conjure you and me, you move and see me in all the directions. Directions unnamed and unknown. How they move, and we move them. And when I try to place these directions in relation to us, a timeline of our relationality, our intimacy and friendship, how we met, how we move, how we know each other, in all the ways that we fuck without fucking, how we feel seen by one another. I wonder what the point is, really. Even the querying of time feels too defined, too easy, too lazy to turn to. Rather, we are magnets that attract the cruising of time. This is how we met and continue to meet. We collide in cruising time. Someone recently told me about symbionts, a life form on Star Trek that lives inside other bodies while they absorb and hold their memories and emotions. When these bodies die, the symbiont migrates to another body, where it takes the knowledge of the previous host while simultaneously storing the memories of the new one. I think I can count the number of moments our bodies have touched. And yet, I can't recall the first time we met. All the fissures between the times we've gotten to be and will get to be physically together again. Brain merging with brain, gaze upon gaze, flesh to flesh. We probably started with a few nervous handshakes, then quick awkward hugs, now a distant yet deeply familiar sensation of queer kin touching queer kin. I remember from a few summers ago, the weight of your head on my shoulder posing for a photo. I felt so large next to you. I liked it. The first time you saw me perform, I think it was the first time, I was dancing in a piece I couldn't connect with. I remember feeling so disappointed that your first experience of me performing live was in the work of another, a work in which I had to disconnect from my body to perform. Performers say the goal is to live the work on stage. Only fake it if you must. But I think that is bullshit. How many times have we had to fake it to make it? How many times have we had to disassociate in order to pass? To exist in different time, to cruise, to fuck, to feel seen, to code switch. Back then, I didn't know you the way I know you now. I didn't know how to read your cues. The way you get anxious and excited at the same time, the way you deal with desire and longing in a moment, how you effortlessly work out the journey of ideas, like I would imagine you know how to jerk yourself off. But you hung around until the audience was almost gone. You hung around and we said hi. Once when we were drinking beers outside, you put my leather jacket on when you got cold. I remember thinking how it suited you, my leather fit you in a completely different way than it fits me, fit with you, wrapped around your torso in a kind of time and space it could never wrap around mine. Usually it cooperates with the way my body expands, as if the leather is making an exception for me, because this jacket is my cruising jacket. This jacket knows that. On you, it hangs perfectly, like it's brand new, hot off the rack, meant to be found. I think about the tiny fissures in that leather, your fissures, the ones you left behind. I know now it was no longer summer, a reminder that time was moving through us that one evening in Berlin at the place where we always drank, ate, gossiped, and desired, where we still do. However, that evening was clear that the warmth I had felt on my skin just a few hours earlier was beginning to dissipate fast, that with darkness, cold would also come. You lent me your leather jacket, silly gay boy unaware of the ways of moving from day to night in a city not of his own. For someone who grew up in a small town, dreaming of wasting time by losing oneself in the big city, in the cacophony of bodies, paces, architectures, it still strikes me that sometimes, after all these years of being a small town boy, being carried on by the rhythms of the cityscape, I still have little clue of how to rein it in, of how to keep the city in check. I can't remember when you and I decided that we love each other. It always just was. Between all the cigarettes I insist you roll me, the endless dinners where we talk in circles and maybe try to argue about what we actually agree on, all the holes, the STIs, the anxiety, the instance, when suddenly, without question, I was just daddy. We submit to each other without needing to ask permission. And this desire between us continues to propel us to our delight without any explicit kind of consensual beginning or end. We never had to decide to love each other because we just did and do. I still remember the time when you told me that you enjoyed going to gay male cruising spots, not just because you were looking to score, but because you loved to exist in that space of suspended temporality, of the chase, of the lingering, that temporality of looking, of being looked back at, that can oftentimes open up new spaces of possibility, awaken new desires, open doors to unforeseen encounters, pleasures, and bodily configurations, that can open us up to surprise, because you know how much I hate ends, as much as I hate beginnings, constraints, definitive allotments of time. It's like when you asked who would write my memoirs, and I told you probably no one. I want them to be timeless, oral, wet, anachronistic, exciting, gossipy. I want the stories of our lives to cruise through infinite bodies who decide how these stories are told and retold and retold. Because there will never be a question of how we loved each other and in what time. In cruising time, in trans time, in fag time, in the time of our thoughts and of our longings. I found a new crack in that leather jacket a few weeks ago, one I'd never seen before. It was late at night when I noticed it, a small fissure in the seam of the left arm between the shoulder and the sleeve. The leather had separated like it had been overused. The lining had herniated through the tear. I'd gone out to get a slice of pizza in the corner around midnight after my fuck date had left. As I was taking off my jacket just before I noticed this new fissure, I was thinking about how this fuck date was not just a fuck date, and that I left an urgency, or I felt an urgency to tell you, specifically you. I think I'm going to stop there. We often read the more like theoretical parts when Joao is here, so I was excited to just do the like more juicy elements.
Yeah, now I feel like maybe my questions will fulfill the other half of the book.
Yeah,
then great. We can balance it out. You can bring some juice back in.
Wow, thank you so much. It's also, it's really great to hear the book also read out loud and like with a certain pace. I feel like I've been reading it off my laptop, which is also, I think, like the least erotic way to read a book. And it's still like making me flustered. So it was really, yeah, it does something. No, but thank you. I wanted to start with a bit of like a zoom out question, around how you wrote the book together, mm-hmm. how you approached this form of co-authorship, and also why you decided or how you came to work through auto theory, and if those two kind of parameters or processes are related in any way or how they act upon each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joao, he had brought me into a lot of his work previously. He loves to work with artists, and that's something as an interdisciplinary artist who also is very invested in research, I end up working with a lot of academics who want to, you know, work with artists in terms of how they deal with worlding and reworlding. So I really can't remember the point at which we decided to write this book, but we really just kind of had this like deep intellectual like love affair. And he was writing about my work a lot, and I was quite inspired by his work. And then I'm sure it was just a drunken night. We were like, let's write a book about cruising, because I had been making work about cruising for now almost over 20 years, really. He had also been in his work dealing with similar themes for just as long a time. And we're both really interested in that kind of like consistency in how this topic continued to speak to us in kind of expansive ways over such a long period of time and change and how one work informed the next. And then we just thought, let's just see what this could be, really. We knew that we wanted it to kind of be, we were really interested in intimacy between queer people that was not actually only starting from a sexual relationship, and that it was, but it was still an erotic relationship, and how that could look, and how we kind of fell in love with each other through our work, and that's how our friendship grew. And so the way we wrote this was like, it was a very generous experience, really. I am not as kind of a seasoned academic writer as Joao. I'm an artist who loves theory, loves thinking, loves thinkers, and is very inspired by that. And so this kind of concept of auto theory just really, it's also how I had been writing already in sort of short essay forms. But his first book is an auto theory book, which is about his experience of being identified with like gay pig sex culture, and also the kind of rise of PrEP and the kind of potentiality that PrEP promised as this like expansive drug for that could kind of like exceed the potential like barriers or of what queerness holds, and sort of how it failed and kind of reaffirmed toxic masculinity in many ways. And so sorry, I'm kind of rambling here, but it's all part of our background together. And so we wanted to come together to talk about also our frustrations of how we can't necessarily, or how we have a hard time meeting in queer space. So we created these own spaces ourselves, and we just started writing, and we passed a document between each other, and we decided to organize the book through the different kind of elements of cruising, breath, space, materiality, etc. And the important thing to us was that, you know, it could be me speaking, it could be him speaking, it doesn't matter. And that kind of just found its way through the emergence of the writing. It wasn't an intention. It was just, it was kind of like an exquisite corpse. One picked up where the other one left off. And the rule was that nothing is, like, we cannot be precious about anything. If I decide to erase your sentence, we accept that. And that was our agreement.
Yeah, I think you really feel in reading the book that there's like something really dynamic in the form of co-authorship, because it's very slippery. Like, you also don't necessarily coalesce into like one new voice, but it's like there's still a kind of, yeah, kind of like plurality that you can still feel in reading it. That's I think it's like a really precious place that you found in that. I wondered also how that relates to, because one of the ongoing things in the book is like grappling with forms of legibility,
mm-hmm.
and how cruising spaces are spaces that they have their own system of codes, of language, be it like actual language or bodily language, that point to a form of like, okay, a performance or a bodily coherence, which necessarily kind of brings us towards questions of identity,
mm-hmm.
and how sexuality also forms identity. But something that I found interesting is that I felt the book continually tried to refuse that identity. And I wondered if you could speak a little bit to how your work also deals with a kind of like identity, anti-identitarianism,
mm-hmm.
and how you kind of continued to like work on that within a book that works from the eye.
Yeah. Well, I think also just in terms of the question of auto theory, I think the way that this book emerged is how auto theory emerges. It wasn't like we set out to say we're going to write this auto-theoretical book. We kind of found our own auto-theory through the emergence of it. We're both, you know, wildly kind of not anti-identity politics, but we do talk a lot in the book about how queer identity politics have kind of reached this representational like threshold and how it's actually destroyed the potentiality of what queerness can actually provide and should be, creating. We look a lot at about kind of like our, especially at like, you know, being in middle-aged queer people about kind of how we at the same time, as much as we sort of like, of course, want this element of like acceptance, visibility, but at the same time, how it, like anything that gets like weaponized, pop culturalized and branded, it then falls apart. And how we are in this kind of constant state of like, I think we're in flux as people and the spaces that we touch and that we're in. And so we don't want to actually land at anything, but what happens when you're forced to land into those identitarian politics, which we all are, you know? So definitely we look at cruising as a potentiality that can, even with all of its codifications, with all of its expectations, it's, you know, we talk about the body politics in this book. We talk about all of that from a very like, kind of like gay male culture to the other end of the spectrum of like queerness and transness. We really look at how to like move away from that collectively, I think is a key element to this and the potentiality of that.
No, this is, I think, yeah, these questions around, yeah, exactly, a way that a certain kind of visibility can produce an object that then moves away from the culture that maybe needed it in the beginning or something, or from the people maybe that needed it. And I wondered, there's a really great line in the where you're talking about being in a dark room and actually being like more excited by not being seen than by being seen.
Yeah.
And then the kind of like conversation in the book goes on, and then it's talking more about legibility and safe spaces. And then it says something about, we have to like look out for the dangerous dangerous expectations of safe spaces. And I wondered if you could kind of unfold that also mm-hmm. with the question of like risk in relation to like artistic work, but also mm-hmm. literature and like this, the relation of what is dangerous expectations and in relation to safe space.
Yeah. I mean, I think the concept of safe space, in the same way that has also become this kind of like representational politic of expectation, that's also, it's related to the policing of space more than anything else now. And kind of like, you know, initially a safe space was very much about, or the idea of it is very much about taking care of one another, regardless of like who you are, where you're supposed to be, or how you identify, or whether you belong there or not. And I think that kind of those like true kind of like desires and needs have been like very much lost along the way. And the more compartmentalized identity politics have become, the more kind of dangerous the concept of a safe space or the construction of a safe space has become for people who enter into them, because you're expected to be a certain way or to look a certain way or to be readable in a certain way. And I really do mean this in a queer context, by the way. And that's what we were really talking a lot about, is, you know, how this kind of the age old kind of discussion of how like cruising spaces aren't safe for anyone other than like cisgendered male people. But without, you know, discussing the even history or reasoning of why cruising spaces do exist, you know, and rather than infiltrating them or like, you know, it also, as I said, like this idea of like constructing a sex space or constructing a cruising space for people who, you know, it is very real that often bodies who don't pass in spaces are kicked out. But then the idea of like constructing that space sort of fails the idea of encounter and connection and possibility that cruising offers, and sort of like how do we create that or how do we foster that as something that is abundant rather than compartmentalized and defined. Yeah,
and I guess also how to understand, like, risk is a part of sex, mm-hmm. and that's also what makes sex sex in many ways, that like there is, but how to understand danger maybe separate from, yeah, a certain form of legibility or a kind of hegemony that,
yes,
yeah, these kind of space. I mean, I guess it's also the question of like the definition of a safe space. In order to kind of produce that and sustain a safe space also is an instantiation of power.
Yes.
And that's the complex moment of like,
yeah,
how that is happening and exactly. who and how flexible that is and yeah. all of these negotiations.
Safe space is always for somebody specific. And that's actually what's problematic about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's when the policing of that space occurs. Mm-hmm. So we do also, I don't know if this is so explicit in the book, but like, I'm very interested in politics around consent, you know, and how discussions of consent have become so problematic and so confusing, particularly when within queer contexts. Not that I absolutely believe in consent, but I also think that like identity politics, it's another element of, you know, that has been really weaponized as well. And just quickly to talk about kind of visibility versus invisibility, like I'm very interested in kind of the underground versus the overground right now. And also how like cruising is the history of cruising is an underground. It's a language. It's a language that's created in the moment. And I think like now more than ever, we're in a point in which we need to go back underground as queer people. We need to start strategizing less visibly, you know, because the more visible we are, the more our visibility is weaponized against us, which we are seeing right now happening all over the world. And there, to me, it is not shocking that we're in this moment, actually. So the question is, you know, what is going stealth? What is creating our own economies again? What is kind of like taking the branding? I love a good queer like Netflix show, but at the same time, that has absolutely, you know, contributed to the moment at which we're at politically. So I'm wondering, like, how do we have those things, give that to the masses, and then really create the underground, really create the resistance? And I think cruising gives us a lot of strategies for that.
Yeah, because I think that also comes a little bit to the question of how these histories are documented, what traces they leave, and how they also build narratives for people to, you know, to adopt as their own forms of history, which is a really important thing that, like, you know, there are obviously a lot of archival practices now that are dealing with forms of like trying to re-narrate and gather materials to like give us the histories that we need in order to like live the lives with the knowledge that has already been kind of invested in. And I think there's like a really interesting problem or a kind of paradox of this desire to like to document, to preserve, to make visible traces of practices that are somewhat about a kind of refusal or an itinerancy or like, and how to deal with that paradox of like needing to leave a trace, because that is also how we produce knowledge in many ways, and also needing a certain form of invisibility or a certain kind of stealthiness of being able to disappear.
Well, I think that that's why Joao and I talk so much about art making and idea making together, because, you know, I think what this book is also sort of indirectly about, which is also something I'm like consistently busy with in my own work, is how do we build a body? You know, we're always building a body consistently. And whether that is something that is like articulated or not, I think that is something that is very, very like central to a queer existence, is a consistent kind of like falling apart and rebuilding that we're always in as queer people. I think that's something that we can really share together. And I think we can leave traces of what we've done, but the strategy is what we're in a constant rethinking of and recreating of.
So it's located actually really materially. Yeah. There are some copies of the book left, not a huge amount. So if you want one, I suggest to grab a copy rather quickly. Liz will also sign your copy, which is pretty special. But yeah, thank you all for coming, and thank you so much,
Liz.
Thank you. That was great. Thanks for listening to the Ryle Books podcast. This episode was edited by Roz Del Olmo, and the music was composed by Eve. If you liked this episode, please think about subscribing to our channel. You can also find more of our past and upcoming events, as well as browse our collection of books via our website, www.ryle.space.